And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake
opposed
up.
To secret societies, the secret oath, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. These are the conspiracy queries that Alan Park is asking. That's all it is. That's all it ever meant. Welcome to the show. We've had some great response last week to our show, and I don't usually say that because maybe you're listening to these shows out of order. And probably you are. But last week's show is kind of an important show because I was speaking with Barry Zwicker. And Barry's a Canadian researcher and a great guy, and he was shining a light on the improbabilities of the terror op that took place in Canada in 2014 in October. And consequently, they've whistled in some new security rules, you know, to prevent something like that from ever happening again. And the whole thing stinks. It's very suspect. There are too many inconsistencies in the reports. There are not enough revelations of the cameras that encircle so many of the buildings all around the shooting area. Of course, we've only seen the selected footage here and there, just whatever they want to show you. They don't want to show you the whole thing. They don't want to show you the planes flying into the Pentagon or over it or around it or whatever happened. We don't know. A lot of people say it crashed. A lot of people say it didn't. There's an unresolved argument there, and I don't know what side of the thing I'm on. Let's have some of that footage. Instead, they went around various hotels and gas stations and gathered the footage so no one can look at it. And then you have to believe everything they say that's reported on the video instead of actually looking at it. You know, this happened in the Boston Marathon, where a lot of people took pictures, you know, because it's a marathon and it's exciting. And a lot of people saw photographs, you know, there were pictures of people planning the thing, setting it up, all of the organizers, and just a sea of people involved with the terrible moments when the bombs went off. And yet the police went out of their way to make sure, don't look at all those pictures, just look at the two we have, that's good enough. And I talk about this with Ula in the show you're about to listen to, because it gets very frustrating when someone in authority says, hey, don't look at all these clues. Don't pay any attention looking to this. We've got it. We've sorted it all out. You don't believe us most of the time. You make fun of us for doing things that are stupid and wrong almost all of the time. But you'll believe us now for some unknown reason, because you can't possibly think that anybody in a bureaucracy would hurt their own people. No, of course, that would never happen. There's no incidents throughout history dotting along the line that shows that's not true. Oh, God, no. So anyway, Ula Dommegaard is here, and he's going to talk about this thing and this op that took place. And it's exciting stuff because it's a spy move. It's a spy novel. It's John Grisham kind of thing. And the politicians here are not responding to this. I've personally contacted several politicians on voicemail and Twitter, email, and tried to contact them. The one that lives in my riding, my particular representative, never sends out anything other than just flyers talking about how great all of the government plans are. So when I called the office to ask about, why is it that they can have a bill in the House of Commons discussing whether or not we should have a security bill, a security means, a security blanket, if you will, stretched across the nation that has no sufficient oversight, that has every ability to run roughshod, as all bureaucracies do over time? And they're shunning this. They don't want to spend any time and effort talking about it. They are limiting expert testimony. That's what Stephen Harper does. He's an idiot. So he has to limit expert testimony, because expert testimony would be the testimony of someone that's well-researched and intelligent, and it's going to fly in the face of the conservative diktat. You're not going to be able to do that kind of thing. So what you have to do is you tell the scientist to shut up. You just be like Bill O'Reilly with a guest on your show, and you tell him to shut up. And that's what Stephen Harper's been doing here. He's been telling all of the scientists to shut up. If you're a government scientist, you're not allowed to say certain things. And if you're one of those guys or women out there, one of those scientists, please find a way to contact me. Listen to the show. Be a whistleblower. Tell us what is going on in there. Tell us what you're being muzzled to not say. You have my promise. I will not out your identity. But we really need to get some facts of what's going on there. Because this Stephen Harper now, with this ridiculous new bill that the Justin Trudeau liberals are too afraid to counter, they say they're going to go along with it, and if there's any problems with it later, when they win, they'll tinker then. Not good enough. And the NDP, other orange party, they're the party with the orange ties. Have you seen them? They're nice. And they're the party that says, oh, we don't like this security bill at all. We think it's bad. And good for them. They're a little bunch of fighters. Good for them, you know. So I contacted the fighter at the helm, Thomas Mulcair. He's the leader of the NDP, you know, the leader. And I contacted his office, and I got a hold of someone there, and I said, thanks for fighting against this bill, the only people in Canada that are even trying. And here's something you don't know. Now, please pull up a computer, I said to this man, because I know what I'm about to say sounds nuts. But that's okay. It's true. Google up Operation Determined Dragon and look at what's going on there and place that window of events around what happened in Ottawa that day and understand how can they be having a discussion in the House about increasing security measures when there were already highly increased security measures. We just didn't know about it at the time. They didn't tell us fully. It was mentioned on a website in April, but of course there was never any attention drawn to it subsequently. So how can you have a discussion about increasing the security? We need to increase security because look what happened. We didn't have it enough. It wasn't increased to our level of satisfaction and desire. And look at what happened. Some people got killed, so we have to up it. But what they don't tell you in that discussion is it was already upped. That's a fraudulent discussion. If you were buying a couch at Leon's or you were buying a used car and the guy is not giving you all of the relevant facts about why that thing exists and what might make it work and operate, that's fraudulent. This guy's fraudulent. So on the one hand, I'm glad they're ushering in new treason laws because I'm sure an intelligent lawyer who does his homework could easily find what I'm saying here as treason coming down from Stephen Harper, who was probably installed by the CIA. Why do I say that? It sounds so paranoid. Basically because there was a WikiLeaks cable that came out in 2009, and this WikiLeaks cable is to the folks in Caracas, and they're trying to help them replace and oust Hugo Chavez at the time. And this WikiLeaks cable highlights the fact that they have already made party renovation and transition to power kinds of efforts in different countries. And one of the countries named is, one is Germany, I forget the other one, and one is Canada. It says they've already done this. Well, we've only got one party that's ever really re-renovated itself and come to power in the last few years. So the jig's up, Steve, or should I say CIA agent? And it's kind of boring, but, you know, I realize that a lot of people don't know about it and you're so far getting away with it. But not everybody thinks that you're getting away with it, certainly not myself. So anyway, thanks for sending John Baird, the Queen, to visit the Queen. Can you believe this guy? John Baird, he was the Queen of England. I'm sorry, he was the Queen of Canada, my mistake. I'm sorry, he was the Foreign Affairs Minister for Canada. Gosh, I knew I'd get it together eventually. And he quit. And apparently a lot of people are saying, you know, it irritated Stephen Harper because he was his best buddy, right-hand man, and didn't give him any notice. And guess what happens? They have this thing in England called Canada House. It's an old building with the word Canada written on it. And if you're Canadian, you can go there and, you know, look at it. It's really fun. Anyway, they had to renovate this thing, and they put a new plaque on it saying the foreign minister was John Baird. Now, John Baird quit a couple of weeks ago. There's still reasons floating around as to why and rumors We're not really sure. He gave us a reason, so we know that's not the reason. But anyway, he then went ahead and did this ministerial duty of receiving the Queen in England, even though he was no longer the minister. I mean, oh, God, that's nothing really to too much. It's not much of a complaint, really, but it's very indicative of just they don't care about anything, these guys. They just do whatever the hell they want, and the guy's not even the minister anymore, and he has to go and attend the official ceremony instead of the actual minister that really is, really should have been there. But, you know, one queen to an old queen's an old queen. So I guess he couldn't resist the temptation. All right. Well, okay, so what's happening basically is there's a coup happening. And if you read my guest's book, the award-winning writer Ola Domagard, that's O-L-E, he's Swedish, and he wrote a book called Coup d'etat in slow motion. It's all about the JFK assassination. It's an incredibly well-researched book. Ola has put into just over three decades of time into unraveling these horrible strands of oppressive information. And this is a great one. You're going to definitely love this. He has done so much work on this, and it's such a thrill to hear Ola talk about this breakdown and the plan and his idea for how we can dissipate that plan and turn things around to our favor for a change. Let's go to our interview. You've been connecting some dots regarding these violent outbursts and shootings that go on now. Can you tell us a little bit about how you found that thread?
Well, the thread has been found for a long, long time. I spent 30 years looking into these things and false flag operations has been going on for many, many, many decades. But after 9/11, they started focusing more and more on, especially the states with false flag operations, trying to get the population to give up their arms. That is why there are so many mass shootings in the states, because they're all built on this old Roman template, problem, reaction, solution.
So in the states, all these shooting things are to get the citizens to give up their own personal guns.
That's my humble opinion. After all of these years, I'm totally convinced that is the idea. Otherwise, they would focus on saying, my God, we need more psychiatrists to take care of these mentally ill people. But here they say, it's the gun, especially automatic weapons. That's the ones you need to. If you give up those, you get rid of the problem.
Okay, now let me just stop you here, because one thing about guns that I don't have resolved within my own self is that I understand that, you know, you want to have a gun to protect yourself and your freedoms and that kind of thing. And if you use it properly, it's a tool. I get it. This is not a mystery to me. I understand that. But I also understand that people do stupid things with them, like it's, you know, there's a woman the other day who was a Republican, she's a 55-year-old woman. I shouldn't be laughing because she died. But basically, she was adjusting the bra harness holster for her little gun she kept there between her breasts, and she blew her head off. So, you know, people, not everybody should have a gun, I don't think. But I'm certainly not on the favor of the states or any state taking it away. But here's my question, aside from all of that, if I keep my gun and the government does not know about it, really, how much good is that going to do me compared to what can the government, if they really are going to take my gun away, what's going to stop them from rolling over my house with a tank?
I can only say that I'm not a pro-guns either. You know, I'm totally non-violent, a pacifist. At the same time, when you study history, you will see that more or less all dictators have done the same. It's the same step by step by step, how they want the population to give up the guns. Once the guns are away, they just move forward without any kind of problems. But so I would very much suggest to keep the guns. Don't use them, but keep them so that you won't be just knocked over by a bulldozer. At the same time, I mean, at this point in history, they have a lot of muscles when it comes to arms. So I don't know either what will keep them, but it sure is an historical step closer to a total dictatorship.
Okay.
Once the guns are given up.
It sure seems like it, particularly in the wake of these shootings, they have these parliamentary discussions over exactly how far these new security laws should go, and they don't address all the relevant factors that surrounded the shooting each time.
This is standard procedure, more or less. It's problem, reaction, solution. They secretly create a problem, a bomb, a mass shooting, a horrible virus or something like that, to get the reaction from the public. And the reaction they always want is to get them crapping in their pants of fear and saying, please, please, save us, we need to be saved. And then they will serve you the solution. And the solution every single time is that you pay, you give up your rights, you accept more and more surveillance, you accept Robocop in the streets, tanks in the streets, super-duper scanners in the airports, that everybody can check your emails, that the police can knock in your door at any time. These are the things that you give up all the time. Had it not been for these problems, you would never, ever have accepted it. So this is why I think it's extremely important to look into these attacks. Are they real attacks or are they false flag operations?
Okay. How do you tell?
If they are false flags, then you have to understand that the enemy is within, you know?
Oh, yeah. So the enemy is within.
How do you see that it's a false flag? You go to the crime scene with a totally open mind and just look for the facts. Check it out and see what really happened. Does it make sense? What does the evidence tell you? And so on, so on, so on. And one of the things that they've used for a long, long time is like a template when it comes to these false flag operations, that it's a lone crazy guy, a lone crazy. Nowadays, they want them to be Muslim because it works really well in media. Since in the old days, the boogeyman, it was the Russians, Bulgarians, East Germans, these type of things. Then when the wall came down, they needed a new boogeyman. Reagan tried for the alien threat, didn't really work. So instead, they had these meetings saying, what can we use? And they came up with the Muslims, perfect group as somebody to blame on, because they look really good in media. I mean, they look scary. Many people from Arab countries or Muslim countries, because they're very dark. They got dark skin, they got black eyes, big mustache, and they got names like Abdul Karim Karunkara. And they come from countries that most people have no idea where they even are. And through this pumping of false information, nowadays, most people, if you say he's a Muslim, your mind will say he's a terrorist. If you say Islam, you will think terrorism. And if you're a poor guy with the name of Abdullah and you're going to travel somewhere, everybody's going to think about, oh my God, where's the bomb? Where's the bomb? It's gone to that extent. And I would say, after 30 years looking into these, I don't even know if there is such a thing as a real terrorist. Because every single time when I dig into it, and I normally dig into as deep as I can, it's inside jobs again and again and again and again.
Okay, let me just spend a bit of time on that notion of the inside job. So right now, there's a couple of different mindsets. There's everything that you're saying. There's everything that you just said and explained to us in the way of, let's create a controlled opposition. Let's make it the bogeyman of Muslims with the head rags and the dark skin and all that. So I understand what you're saying perfectly. And I understand that people are afraid of this, and we keep moving the ball along with these false flag issues. So far we're on the same page. Here's where I get a little confused, so help me with your 30 years of research.
Yep.
Okay, here's where I get confused. I get confused because, on the one hand, I understand that everything that you said is very true and likely and most likely to be the case. I also understand that when a government like the United States, and maybe Canada follows along, and Britain and all of these countries, when they decide, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to invade this area and drop bombs in this place. They really are invading, and they really are dropping bombs, and they really are killing people. And so sometimes I think a terrorist is nothing more than a person who has suffered the inhuman indignity of having his own particular area where he lives invaded by not only the next county over, but another country, and drop military hardware there, a lot of it sometimes radioactive, and then just, you know, peppered the place with death. And if I was to survive such an attack, if I were to make it through that alive, and my mom and dad were dead, and maybe my little sister too, I can see why someone might decide they would be doing everything they can to kill anybody and everything American. Now, I don't condone this. I am not supporting terrorism to anybody listening, so shut up with that. All I'm saying is, you come to my house and you smash it down and you murder everybody I love and know and care about, I'm sort of thinking I'm a little closer to being a terrorist, or whatever they call that, in a terrorist camp, you know, because I've lost everything. And they have done this to an unbelievable amount of people with the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. So, Ulla, what I'm saying is, while what you put forward is plausible, do we not actually have really upset, angry, invaded people that are in a sort of a repressed, ridiculous, animalistic state, fighting back from being destroyed and having their lives ruined by a foreign country? Isn't there such a thing as a scorned terrorist for real?
There might be, and I can say I totally agree with what you said. I mean, I do not point blaming fingers if somebody who have gone through these awful events that you're talking about, if they're full of revenge and so on, I can totally understand that. The events that we're looking at is when you get into the real evidence of what happened. If you look into the Boston bombing, for instance, if you look into Sandy Hook, if you look into the Oklahoma City bomb, if you look into 9/11, if you look into the latest shooting in Ottawa, if you look into the Paris shooting, and if you look into the Copenhagen shooting, look at the evidence and it will tell you a different story. This is not the story of some poor Iraqi parent who are totally devastated because of the death of his children. These are highly sophisticated operations carried out, and then you will very soon afterwards see the result of it, the agenda that is presented to you as the solution. This is why I have focused so much on trying to expose this template so that people would become aware of it. And I was even able to predict this thing in Copenhagen 1 month ahead.
That is the interesting part, and we will find out about that prediction in just a couple of seconds. You're listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park on Sirius XM Channel 167. We're with Ulla Dommegaard, and we'll be right back. Ulla, just before the break, you were explaining that a month before the attack took place in France, the Charlie Hebdo attack on a satirical magazine site, you predicted this was going to take place. You just said that on the air. I'm just reminding those folks that might be just joining us, you predicted this attack. And, okay, one thing you knew to be able to predict it was you've been studying this kind of field for 30 years or so. But what else did you come across that alerted you that in about a month's time that attack would occur?
That's not totally correct. I predicted the latest one that took place in Copenhagen, not the Paris one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I misread that. Okay.
I had information leaked to me through some sources a few months ago that there was going to be a series of attacks in Dublin, in Paris, in Copenhagen, and somewhere in Italy. And when I received this information, I didn't really know what to do with it. Then I was contacted by a man who said that there was this very weird image, like a photo collage that was circulating in the press on Ireland. And there were four photos quite sinister photos. There was one where it says Israel now, Dublin next, and then there's this sculpture in Dublin of death. You know, it's a very dark figure and a bomb with that. Then there was another photo where it says Israel now, Paris next, and there was a photo of Mona Lisa with some kind of grenade. Then there was a photo of the little mermaid from Copenhagen, where it says Israel now, Copenhagen next, and then with a bomb in front of it. And then Israel now, Italy next, with some Italian sculpture and a bomb in front of it.
Okay.
So when I received this, or when I heard of the second one, after I found out that there had just been a supposed bomb attack in Dublin that was diffused. It was the Intel plant outside Dublin that was supposed to be blown up, but they discovered it and it didn't happen. So I thought, wait, that is what two different sources have told me. And I also know from all of these years of research that the power behind these things have a very, very sinister, almost, I would say, sick way of teasing the victims, almost that they let out information beforehand, almost right in front of our eyes. I don't know why they do it, but I've seen it again and again that it leaks out beforehand and then boom, they do it.
Well, if somebody doesn't even know now exactly what happened and these false flags are something that the planners are getting away with, that doesn't surprise me at all. Because in the aftermath of the event, you and I can sit here and talk about, you know, the planning and the certain checklist that you can run through to see if something is a false flag. But ultimately, they're just, you know, they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it afterwards, after much discussion and potential focus on what happened. So it's easy to see how they'll get away with it beforehand with just a couple of, you know, quick revelatory glances to only those that would be very much so paying attention.
But the thing was, since when this thing happened in Dublin, and I was looking into that one, and then boom, it happened in Paris. Then I thought, as soon as I looked into Paris, I got deep into details, and very quickly, I mean, I can go into great details about the Paris one and just very easily show you that this was a setup. So I thought, oh my God, Dublin, Paris, could it really be the next one in Copenhagen, just like the info that had been leaked to me? So what I did was, since a drill is a very common ingredient in these false flag operations, that almost all, every single time there's a drill going on at the same time, some kind of terror drill.
Give us a few examples. Pair up a few drills with the actual terror event. Give us a couple of ideas of what you mean with
that. Okay, you had several drills going on the day of 9/11 with the exact theme that was going on, totally confusing many of the people that was involved in. They were like, is this a drill or is it live? Is it real? You know, because I've done so many interviews.
Confused.
The fighter planes, they didn't know, you know, is this for real or is it? NORAD was there with one drill. There were other drills going on as well. The sinking of MS Estonia that blew up and killed 1,000 people, that there was a drill identical to what happened then. There was a drill at the Boston bombing. They went out with that drill just a few minutes beforehand. Boom, the bomb went up exactly like the drill said. There was a drill at the 7/7 bombings in London. There was a drill in Madrid. There was, and so it just goes on. A drill is a very often recurring ingredient in one of these false flag operations. And they even make advertisements about it in the local newspaper saying, today we're going to have a mass shooting drill here and here and here. Oof. And I believe the reason for that is for them to be able to get vehicles in position, get the explosives in there without people interfering, getting all, you know, background things.
I don't mean to be taking this as an idea, okay? This is not a suggestion or an idea, but I thoroughly agree with the fact that you're saying this, because they orchestrate the response to this thing in a certain way that this proves that the mindset of the actual op, of the terror op itself, was written by the people that are, you know, trying to prevent these terror ops from happening in the same light. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
So we've had the same thing here in Canada. That's why I was fascinated when you contacted me about this Copenhagen shooting, because I wanted to know, you know, what kind of things do you know about the Canada attacks? Because I know some things I'd like to share with you, but what do you know about it from afar?
It follows the template exactly, you know. It's the same setup, and I've come to the I have a theory. I haven't been able to prove it yet, but I think that it's almost that they've taken this on a global tour, that we see the same actors carry this out in Paris as did it in Ottawa, as have now done it in Copenhagen and so on. Because after 9/11, after when the Boston bombing, the Aurora shooting, Sandy Hook and so on, after 9/11, I believe they came to a point where they had so much problems with the families and especially the mothers of victims, because they would not back down. They would just keep breathing down their neck trying to find out what really happened, you know. So according to people in the CIA that I've been in contact with, one of them being Chip Tatum, the whistleblower, he also said that they try to keep it to as small a group as possible to have total control over all parameters. They need control of the vehicles, the background people, pedestrians, whoever, carries the whole thing out, the one who films it, the reporter, the people that are being interviewed, and the families to the so-called victims.
Right.
All of these are part of this, almost like a theater group. And I believe that we are seeing the same group going globally between these different countries.
You mean the guys that are the bad guys, the shooters, the killers, these guys that we've shot and dealt with, these are the same actors?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I tell you, many of these things does not happen for real.
Right.
You know, like this man that was, this police officer that was shot in Paris. Let me go into some details about that, and then you can make up your own mind.
This is from the Charlie Hebdo shooting, the one on the sidewalk?
Yeah, the sidewalk. Okay. I think most people have seen that by now.
Yeah, they have.
So you've seen, I mean, when you look at it, it's awful. If what they say happened, that is absolutely awful. But if you look into the details and the evidence on site, I used to work as an extra on movie sets for a few years, and so that gave me a lot of time to just study how these things were carried out, you know, like when you did a film shoot for Coca-Cola or some lollipop or chewing gum or whatever. It's the same setup. And what you do is, if you need to do a shooting in a city center, the producers of the film go to the local authorities. They get a permission to close off the street.
Oh, sure.
Because they need to have total control of all vehicles, everyone in the background, whatever goes on there. And they need continuity, meaning that if there's several different takes, they need the background to do exactly the same every time. Otherwise, when they edit it together, it might be messed up. So this is why people like myself, if I was doing something in the background, they would put a cue marker on the ground saying, this is point A, and put another cue marker in another place. And they say, okay, when we shout background action, you start walking from point A to point B, or right, whatever it was that I was supposed to do.
Sure.
And it's always background action first and then action for the real actors that are close to the camera. And one of the main things that you're not supposed to do as an extra, you cannot look into the camera, because that is a giveaway. So look any other direction, but not into the camera. Also, when the vehicle is involved, they will put like cue markers for the vehicles as well, because the camera angles and all of these things, so that the car, if it has to stop, it will stop in exactly the same spot every time that a new take is done and so on. So we look at this thing in Paris. The official story, two terrorists stops the car. They've shot a police officer that are rolling around wounded on the pavement, and they run up to him, fires a deadly headshot and runs back into the car, takes off. You look at what happened here. If you check out the video, you will see that there's a line in the middle of the street, a black line, which is exactly under the center of the car. That is normally the marking for a car, so to give the where sideways it has to go. So it stopped there. Then to the right of the car, there's a trainer on the street, just a shoe lying there. And when you see them jump out, you check both shooters have shoes on. So this is an extra shoe. But that, in my opinion, is just showing the exact position of where they should be when they open the door and so on. Because when the second terrorist, the guy on the passenger side, comes back, he grabs the shoe and throws it into the car, meaning the shoe is theirs. Okay. Then you see the police officer has apparently been shot. So he's rolling around and he's holding his hands toward his leg, meaning that he's bleeding. I mean, if he's shot, he must be bleeding. But then when the terrorist runs up towards him, he holds up his palms and you can see no blood, no blood whatsoever. Then you have the car. It's a C3. It's a Citroën C3 from 2014, as far as I've been able to find out, with chromed side mirrors. Now, the car that is later checked by the forensic team is a Citroën C3 2013 with black side mirrors. Not the same vehicle, but it's in that vehicle they find all the evidence that then point towards these brothers. Okay, and both brothers have brown eyes, and one of the victims said she got so scared because his eyes cold, blue eyes, you know. Okay, then you have, when you look at how they run up these two shooters, the guy, when he runs across the street up on the pavement, you will see on the pavement where he gets up there a cue marker. He runs by the guy, fires a shot, and then turns back. Where he turns back, another cue marker. And then when he goes down in the street and turns towards the car, there's a third cue marker. Exactly the way it would have been had it been a film set. Huh. Then you listen to the sound. You turn up the volume really loud, and you will hear the background sound. You will hear that there are children playing. You can hear like in a playground or something like that. Then the shots are fired. What normally happens if you've been to a war zone or in these kind of situations, I've been that, people freak out. You know, they start screaming or they go very quiet or they run away or, you know, mothers say, come, like this. Here, the background noise just continues. The laughter continues in the background, even though these shots are fired. Then you have the shots themselves. They're very powerful sounds, you know. But when you check the echo, in my opinion, it's the sound of a shot fired between on a street, but where there are buildings on both sides. That's the echo.
Where did you hear this stuff? Where did you get that kind of insight?
Alan, it's 30 years of my life looking into these things.
Oh, okay, but I'm asking you to tip your hand a little bit on where you might have actually heard audio so that you could make these kinds of, you know, audio determinations.
No, I've used to do films. I'm a musician. I've done music for TV and so on. So this has been part of my, you know, I've done film editing, these type of things. Yeah. So I'm used to looking into it. I don't know how you add background sound, how you amplify sound effects.
Okay, because I was curious, too, about the policeman on the ground. Everything that you said is so fascinating. But I was also taken by the fact that when the guy actually appears to shoot at him and the gun kicks, well, it appears to me that the what is getting shot is the sidewalk about 2.5-3 feet away from the guy's head. And then later we're being told that he had his head blown off. And you can see in the video that's not the case at all.
But I disagree with you there as well. There's, when you see, if you go down in extreme slow motion, you will see that when this guy runs by, there's no recoil from the weapon at all. There's no shot fired. And just like you say, it looks like there's a ricochet from the pavement. But if you zoom in, you will see that it's a smoke canister from the left hand of the police officer. It detonates from his palm upwards and in a right angle.
Okay.
So it comes from his palm, and you will see, you can freeze the frame, and you can see there's a small black canister in his hand. That's where the smoke comes from.
Okay.
So I think that the sound effects have been added afterwards. I don't think there's any shooting going on at all. Absolutely no. With an AK-47, that's a powerful weapon.
But what happens to these cartoonists at Charlie Hebdo? Where do they go?
It's a, if somebody got killed or not, I don't know. I really don't know, because also, you know, you're presented all of these awful, you know, the images of the victims. But when you look at other false flag operations, actually, in some cases, no one died at all. And so here we are again looking, are these really victims, or have they killed them just to make a point or something like that? By the way, the Rothschild family bought the Charlie Hebdo newspaper just a few weeks beforehand. At that time, the edition was less than 70,000, and afterwards it was 7 million. So they just made.
Are you serious?
They made a profit. They made a profit about 10,000%.
That's like the guy that used to own the World Trade Center complex, buying that thing 6 months beforehand and insuring it cheaply and then getting a double payout. I mean, God, some people have connections.
Larry Silverstein, but this is the thing. It is by studying them one by one by one in great detail that you will see, oh my God, here they go again.
Right.
Same pattern.
Well, let me ask you some questions about the Canadian one, because I did actually go to Ottawa and I did walk around and have a look at the scene of the crime, if you will.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to tell you about how, I don't know how to speak on behalf of my countrymen who have not, I have not seen any kind of discussion of this nature outside of a very small handful of people. Here's what I'm talking about. Here's what happened in Ottawa. The area where the attacks took place was just outside of the main capital city area, Hull. And these two police officers were killed. A couple days later, the ceremonial guard was killed. Now, this area where the guy was killed is a very, very busy area. Okay, there's government workers coming and going. There are hotel workers coming and going. There are homeless people sitting there asking for money. There are kids going back and forth from university, shoppers and restaurant diners, people going to bars. This is a busy area, hugely busy area. And somehow the killer manages to shoot the ceremonial guard that's guarding the very center of all of this hubbub that I've just described. And then from there, gets into a car. Now, Ula, I don't know if you've been to this particular area of Ottawa. If you leave a car somewhere in this area, it's going to be ticketed, towed, and gone in about 8 seconds. Okay? But somehow, no problem. After this murder, I'll just jump into this easily parked car that's here. And he drives this thing down the street unaccosted. And another guest on my show, Barry Zwicker, says he goes right by a police car. Anyway, he pulls up to this entranceway that is very far away from the entrance of the Parliament building. I'm talking like a couple of hundred yards or more. And this place is generally and normally swarming with RCMP police officers because, you know, it's the government and we have to protect what's going on in there. And this guy manages to run through and run all the way down in there. Then he's inside the building. Now, luckily, it's a day when the cameras are all there from the TV studios because the politicians are actually there and answering questions. And this shooter is now inside the Parliament buildings. He hides behind an alcove. It's a very old, old style Gothic building, and he hides behind one of the alcoves. And Ula, I don't know if you've heard this part. This is the best part. One of our news readers here in Canada, this Evan Solomon, his name is. He's on the CBC, you know, so it's the truth. And Evan Solomon describes this old man who's named Kevin Vickers, the sergeant-at-arms inside the House of Commons. He was the one that actually figured out where the shooter was hiding. And Ula, like Bruce Willis in Die Hard.
I know.
Rolling around the corner and rolling on the floor and shooting up with a double-handed pistol grip into the killer that was hiding in the alcove. And we can prove this because you can see the bullet holes in the wall of this stone building, you know. And it's very impressive. Yeah. The only thing is, Ula, those holes in the stone were there a long time ago. There's a gentleman who first came on the internet and said, hey, I visited the house. I went to that tour, and I have a picture of that same alcove, and those same holes are in it. So this is where the guy was killed, by this old man. And the whole thing's nuts. The area I walked around outside, all surrounded with cameras, lots of them, on the different building tops, pointed in different directions. None of this we've seen. And I've saved the best for last, Ulla. Just like you said, while all of this was going on, there also happened to be a thing that had been announced earlier in the year called Operation Determined Dragon.
The drill.
Operation Determined Dragon. Yeah, a drill. And do you know what the drill was for? Well, it was to prevent the terrible things that were going on in this very event that happened again. And these assholes, they refuse and will not talk about that particular aspect while they're in Parliament debating whether or not we should bring in these new laws and security measures. They won't mention the fact that all of these attacks went on under a heightened state of security already. You know what I mean? So now it's just, you can tell. I haven't been doing this for 30 years, but you can just tell it stinks. And when you won't talk about a certain aspect of something, well, then I can't talk about any of it.
Alan, can I go into some details about this one? Because this is really interesting, I think.
Well, those details as soon as we come back, Ulla. Thanks for jumping in. Ulla's got some crazy details on this shooting. We'll be right back with Conspiracy Queries on Channel 167. Okay, Ulla, you are just about to get into some details, and we had to jump away for a second, but please, the floor is yours.
Okay, when you look at all the different footage from this day, there's a lot of question marks here. And if you look at when, after this soldier has been shot, you have to look at the symbolic value of this whole thing, because they always do it on Patriots Day or Veterans Day, or here we were in front of the war memorial, and afterwards the reporter were walking around with Poppy, except they were interviewing the soldier's friend and so on as well. If you see where he was shot, it's on the side of the monument so that it can't really be seen from the street. Also, when you see some of the footage, the whole area had been cornered off with these yellow, around like a crime scene type of thing. And this is why they were still giving this guy CPR. There was a small little group around that, but a massive big empty space around them, where if something normally would have happened, if somebody had been shot, there would have been hundreds of people on site trying to help and so on. Here, nothing like that at all. A handful of people. And if you check out the photos, you will see that there are two people that look like bouncers, more or less. They're standing with their backs towards the camera all the time. They look like former Marines. And one of them had a hood on. And if you enlarge that big enough on the hood itself, it has the emblem of the Canadian Royal Army, you know, the cross, the swords and the oak leaf.
Yeah.
So I would very strongly suggest check out these two guys, because they've got bouncers when it comes to these things, because they don't want anyone, a civilian, who suddenly starts interfering or something like that. Their job is to keep people away.
Yeah.
Then you have this team that helps him. And they afterwards are so sad that he died and so on. And this woman that I interviewed, she says, oh, he was so handsome and so much fun. So much fun. You gave a dying man CPR. How do you know that he was so much fun? Then you look into this guy, and I believe that I've been able to identify him as the exact same person who was killed in Toulouse in 2012 as a soldier there. His name was Colini or something like that.
Oh, Nathan Cirillo.
Look at him, then check out the Toulouse shooting in 2012. I tell you, if that is not the same person, I'm going to contact a person at the FBI, Louise Gibson, who's an expert on face identification, and see if she can compare the two face structures and so on, because I think it's a dead ringer, these two.
Toulouse, and France. That was a shooting in 2012. I'm not familiar with that one.
2012. Okay. You would see he's a soldier with an Arabic name, a Moroccan name. He's got a red, what do you call it, a red, these things on the head. Barrett or whatever you call it, and in a uniform. I would I tell you that I think it's the same actor here. You will also see.
We'll take a look at that.
Please do. And then, when it comes also to this whole thing, the timeline often differs. In Ottawa, if you listen, to start with, it was a Toyota with two people, two shooters. Suddenly, the first one, the second one, just disappears, and you got this single guy who drives on his own. He leaves the car, and then he managed to get back into the drive, just like you say, no tow, no one interfering. He drives off, and he passes. You can see one of these cameras, surveillance cameras, shows a police car almost blocking off the other side of the street, you know, so that nobody would interfere, I would say. And then he drives on, continue. And then you have this whole John Wayne stunt inside and so on. At the same time, while all of this is happening, you got the military guys, the people we see all the time now, like Robocops, black with bulletproof vest and often with facial masks and so on. They're one place where they're standing outside, and like it looks like an office building, and there are lots of people coming out in the background. Look at these people, and you will see that one thing that when there are big things going on, you know, like the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, other false flags as well, when there are lots of extras, they very often have like I don't know what you call that, not a necklace around their neck, but a thing around their neck with like a name and color code. This is normal in film scenes as well, because if you need a lot of extras, then group blue will be over there, the yellow group will be over there,
right.
The green group is having dinner.
Yeah, it's more directorial control, that's all.
Exactly. You will see that more or less all of these people that are so-called escaping from this office building, many of them have exactly that thing around their neck.
Okay.
That they had that in Boston bombing. You will see that there. They had that in Sandy Hook. And many, many others, they had the same. And also, if there's a shooter on the loose, wouldn't you keep people inside? Would you let them out? I don't think so. But here we're saying it's a long, long, long line of people coming out, with soldiers standing out in front, you know, guarding, apparently. Sorry, it's just like these are the things that when it starts, if it's only one or two, but when it gets up into the hundreds,
sure,
of each single case, you sort of like, here we go again.
Right, and I remember the Boston Marathon. There were a lot of shots, photographs of these guys in tan boots and sort of heavier, yeah, you know, tough-ass jackets kind of thing, and they were all there before. They were there at the beginning, and then, of course, we don't mention this later, and then further into the investigation, that FBI guy said, look, a lot of people are looking at photographs and footage, and we'd ask you to stop doing that. Just look at these two pictures that we supplied, and that's all you need to know. And honestly, I mean, how stupid do they think we are? Okay, so these people are wearing tags around their necks, and they're identifiable, and they can be controlled, and they have the ability to be directorially moved around to pull off this illusion. Am I right there?
Yep.
There are still lots of people involved. We're not just talking about two or three guys like me and you sitting down, coming up with a plan and unleashing it on the world. We're talking about teams of people. We're talking about citizens that are supposed to look like, you know, regular people, just normal folks out there having their day kind of dressed up. Then you've got cops that may be in on it, may not be in on it. Either way, they're wearing the uniform. And you've got these people who, if they were these same actors, have either been paid off and gotten they're gone and they've moved somewhere else, or they're still doing these events. Like you say, you believe this Nathan Cirillo guy to be the same guy involved in the shooting in France. So there is a level of organization here into the hundreds, perhaps thousands, to be able to put something like this together. So who cooks all of these things up? How do they come up with this plan? And then how do they make sure that Stephen Harper gets this thing done in Canada and, you know, the guy in Ireland, sorry, I didn't know your leader's name, gets that done in Ireland and through on and so on through France? Like, these plans are almost exactly the same. Who's cooking them up, and how are they getting those plans to these leaders who are obviously enjoying some kind of payout? They have no moral fiber if they know this is going on and they don't say anything about it.
Lots of questions at the same time.
And we'll see you again next week.
I'll take them one by one.
Okay, sure.
Okay. The team I would strongly suggest is that we're seeing the same team, the same background actors, for instance, the same people playing Robocops and so on in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in Denmark, as in Paris. You just see people running around with the SWAT team uniform of that area.
Sure.
There's always a great deal of compartmentalization in these actions, but normal police have no idea at all. They're just being told the SWAT teams are moving in, you back off, and they're doing their job. They're standing in a bit in the background, just watching like the rest of us, doing what they're told, you know, keep people away and so on. They have absolutely no idea if this is real or if it's not. Do you know, at the 7/7 bombings, the local police were informed about the drill, and there was exactly the same scenery, the same as what actually happened. So they were standing outside the subway stations when the bombs went off. People were coming out, there was smoke everywhere. People were dying in the streets, and the police didn't help them because they said, oh my God, it looks so real. It's incredible what they can do nowadays, you know, with sound effects and actors and so on, not understanding that the drill had gone live. Okay, so I think, and when it comes to the plan, we're not talking about different plans. It is one plan that is being carried out globally. The people behind this plan are what I would call, they love calling themselves the global elite. I call them the minority because it's a very small little group of people, actually. They're like maybe a few thousand in total. And in way up in the so-called power pyramid, we have groups like the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations,
sure,
the Trilateral Commission,
okay,
these type of things. It is in these groups where, and the Freemasonry networks, where you can see how they are connected. They control a handful of people from each country, you know, the prime minister, parts of the royal family, in media, communication, in the military and intelligence, in all of these different bankers, politicians, these people, handpicked people in key positions, meaning that you can more or less control a country the size of Canada with, if you control maybe 20, 25 people, for instance, in the Bilderberg Group. And then they have these very secret meetings at least once a year where they make up the agenda for the coming year.
Okay.
So what we're looking at, this is not that, oh, something happens in the States, oh my God, something happens in Canada, oh my God, something happened in Sydney, I have no idea, how is this possible? It is very possible because they are connected.
It's an agenda rollout. You know,
it's the New World Order.
Yeah.
They want to take over big time. They want to be able to control all areas of life. But they need a threat from the outside. Otherwise, we would never, ever accept it. This is the thing.
Well, do you know this? I want to tell you this real quickly, okay? This security bill that Canada is now trying to usher into position because of these terrible terrorist attacks, the particular bill that you are aware of here, is remarkably similar. It's almost identical to a bill that Canada tried to put through a couple of years ago, I think 3 years ago. The previous minister that was trying to put this bill through was putting this security measure through because of terrorism, and we want to make sure that, you know, you're not saying the wrong things on the internet. And it was stated as such. We have to tighten up things and you know, NSA kind of thing, and we're going to bring this in, and it's for the safety of everybody. And I was amazed, but Canada just went, no way, forget it. We're not doing that. That's ridiculous. That is oppressive. You can't sell us to this. And this is coming from a government that claims to be a majority government at the time. Majority government. And they couldn't pass this thing that they really wanted to pass. And they withdrew it. And we were all proud of ourselves as Canadians that we actually stopped some bad oppressive legislation for a change instead of just lying down and rolling it in. Well, guess what? couple of years later, this attack comes, and it gets whistled through. No one's asking a damn thing about it. The same one that we were all absolutely no, opposed to before. Now we're, well, oh, yeah, sure, yeah, put it in, help, save us. So you're right about this problem, reaction, solution, because this bill is almost identical to the one that once we had time with it, and they brought it in like, hey, we're floating this idea. We think we'd like to do this. What do you guys think of it? And everybody was like, no. All the newspapers, all the people, it was like 80% of people said, no, forget it. And they went, oh, okay. And they withdrew, and now it's back in this form, and it's going in like no problem.
Because of the problem. Had it not been for the new problem to get the reaction from the population, something needs to be done, and here's the solution.
Yeah.
For your protection, they always do it for your protection. Absolute bollocks. It has nothing to do with your protection. It is to control you and me. That's the whole plan.
I just don't know how much more control, though, they want to have. I mean, you
know. Total control of all areas, Alan. This is a very, very dark and sinister agenda they have.
Well, it certainly
is. You look into Agenda 21. It's right there, black and white in front of you. I mean, read books like 1984, these type of books, and you will see the exact scenario that they are planning for. So I call it the Fourth Reich. It is a very, very dark future they plan for us.
So they must be owning, they must actually do own the, you know, as they say, they've consolidated the media ownership from hundreds of different companies and broadcasting ventures down to a handful owned by a very small amount of people to prevent the questions, the normal questions being asked and these inconsistencies that any bona fide journalist is happy to shine a light on. But it seems like everybody's just going, oh, these terrible attacks happened and our precious leader, and now we have these laws to save us. No one's asking questions in a media capacity here.
I tell you, I used to be a journalist. I'm ashamed of calling myself. I say former journalist because I think there are hardly any real journalists left. You know, it's a disgrace that nobody is really looking into these things and keep buying it. But it's just like you say, the ownership of these. I mean, in the States, that massive big country, you're down to like six owners of all media, more or less. So, and they keep. That's the thing. They keep pushing for more and more centralized power in all different areas of life.
Yeah.
Which makes it great as well for me, because the group has become so small that it's so much easier to find out. In the old days, it was spread all over the place. Now it's very, very focused.
So conceivably to me, what I think of is this focus group, these small amount of people. This is the thing I can't get past, and I know you've got to get going soon, so let me know. But if there are actors involved in these horrible ops that are going on, some of them, obviously, get to live still and continue to have their life, perhaps as some kind of paid-off capacity. But, of course, we don't want that person talking about their experiences or you know, opening up about the truth. We don't want Robert McNamara admitting in the fog of war 40 years after the fact that the Vietnam invasion was a lie based on a fake event. We don't want to have that, you know, so we need people to just sort of shut up and go away. So if this is really true, then there may still be passengers that were on the air attacks of 9/11 that are living somewhere with a nice little payout and some other people that get involved in these things, these events. They must be, you know, scattered around the globe, maybe listening now.
No. It's a very small group moving around. And, you know, Chip Tatum, he's a CIA whistleblower. He was a deep cover agent for 25 years, a black op assassin. He was one of the assassins in George Bush Sr.'s ultra-secret private hit team called Pegasus, and they carried out at least 17 assassinations. And he has also been part of false flag operations. I asked him about this because, like in Sandy Hook, for instance, and Boston, I mean, there's so many people involved. And he said, it's not difficult. You know, you can have in an army, you can give an order to 1,000 people, they follow it. Here we're talking about a couple of hundred maximum. And he said, first, when you control a group, you do it by money. First, you reward them. And if that doesn't work, because sometimes there are always somebody that gets second thoughts, especially when they see where things are going and so on. So you just threaten them. Very easy, he said. you threatened a child or a family member or something like that, you beat them up. If that doesn't work, then you statue an example. You get rid of one of them, but you let the rest in the group know what's going on,
okay,
so that they know if we don't get back in line, we're next.
I connect these with ISIS in that, you know, they keep inferring here that because of ISIS and what goes on with those crazy people over there, these are the ones that are doing this terrorism and we have to protect ourselves. So
absolutely.
In your mind, is ISIS really a bunch of ragtag nutcases driving around killing people and throwing gay people off buildings and burning people and all of these things? Or, you know,
we're looking at a hoax the size of the Empire State Building. It is a massive joke, this whole thing. Al-Qaeda, it's even the name, it's the CIA's own name of their database. It means database in Arabic, Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Al-Qaeda with their agents, they weaponized them, they trained them, they got the whole thing going, and then they used them as a terror tool to frighten, as a boogeyman outside, to scare the living bejesus out of us so that they could justify their solutions. Then it came to a point where people don't buy it anymore. You can't even scare an infant with Al-Qaeda anymore. So they needed to upgrade it. So they came up with ISIS. Whoa! And I mean, it's on a level you cannot even believe it. When you look into the history of the ISIS, they came from absolute nowhere. Then you have, I can't remember the name of the first guy. His name was W.A. Wasquera or something like that. Okay, so you look into the history of him. He was the leader of ISIS, yeah?
Sure.
Okay, he was killed in 2005. I'm not sure about the details if I get it right, but this is the story of his life, more or less. He was killed in 2005. Then he was wounded in 2006. He escaped from prison. Then he was killed again.
Well, they're good, you know.
They're good. Then the guy that took over, I would say that they needed somebody with a name that it couldn't be too complicated. So what were they going to come up with? Baghdad. Everybody knows Baghdad because we've been bombing the crap out of that poor place. So they call him
Al-Baghdadi.
Al-Baghdadi. That will stick, you know. So this guy has a similar fate. He gets killed, then he disappears. He escapes from prison, then he's killed. He is wounded again.
He's
a tough guy.
Yeah.
And then he dies. And then he appears again as Al-Baghdadi number two, totally different person, who is now in charge. I mean, come on, who did they hire to do these scripts? Is it Monty Python?
It is Monty Python. Ola, I think they tested out. Listen, they've already had this other story about this guy who was a terrorist. And actually, first of all, he was a business partner. And then from his business partner dealings, he became eligible to be a CIA agent. And then he was a CIA agent for a long time. Then he was a bad guy again. And then he was killed because he had bad kidneys. But then he escaped. And then they killed him again. And then we couldn't see his dead body because they had to put it in the ocean, because that's what Muslims always do, you know. And
they never, ever do that.
I'm just saying, if we swallowed that story, of course they're going to...
I know. The level... When you look at these things, it comes to a point where your head wants to explode because it's so ridiculous. Do you know the plane that is said to have hit the Pentagon? The whole plane disappears into the hole the size of a missile. Okay, they say the official story to this day is that the wings folded with these two 6-ton engines, partly made of titanium.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing disappeared into the building where it vaporized due to high heat.
Right.
That is on the same level as if I come home and I've lost my car because I've been drunk. I phone up the insurance company and say, listen, my car is missing. I reversed again. I hit a wall or something like that. And the friction, just the heat from the friction made the car vaporize.
It's all gone.
Would they pay? No. And this is the same, but just because... This is the official story that we're being pumped with again and again, then we buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with people still strangely have this benevolent view of the government. Like, there's no way they would hurt us. They're our government.
Alan, Can I just say, do you know the meaning of the word government? It is Latin, and it means governmente, control the mind.
Yeah.
Mind mente. Control. It's right there in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, that's pretty amazing, because now we have a situation in Canada where they're saying that if you protest and draw, you know, reasonable notice to the environmental degradation of the repeated drilling and pounding away there in the oil sands, that you are a terrorist. This is the new definition, you see, because the paradigm they've set up is you can't even question the validity of the economic properties of what they've chosen to do to make money and make oil. You can't even ask questions. You can't draw attention to this. You're not supposed to talk about it in any kind of way that it might be negative, or you are a terrorist. And then they can start using these new laws against you if they so desire. I'm sure they'll start trying them out here and there.
But Alan, you and I, people like us, I would say, I have not a violent bone in my body. I just want peace and happiness and beauty for everyone. But we are soon on the line as terrorists, if we're not already there. But this is the thing, and when they talk about national security, I beg to differ. It's their security. These are things they don't want you and I to look into.
No, absolutely.
So I say the truth fears no investigation. So why are they fearing, you know, why do they bury all these documents? Why do they do all of these things if they're there to protect us?
Well, it must be a pretty good job to be a politician, though. Don't you think it must be a little bit? Because they obviously know some stuff. And they're not, like, for example, in Canada, they are not asking questions relative to the drill that was going on. They advertised on a Canadian government military website that it was going on. They won't put these two issues in the same sentence when they're asking questions. They've never mentioned the term dragon at all. And they have to know about it. Somebody has to know about it. And then someone has to be making the choice, well, I'm not going to bring that part up. I'll just ask about the other part. But how do they control them to make sure they only, I mean, is it fear you're going to say to some low backbencher, look, make sure you go along with this or we'll endanger your children?
I asked that question in Sweden when I was in a small group that really tried to find out the truth behind the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister. And I spoke to a man who was very high up in the custom offices in Sweden. And he had been very much involved with the government and so on in Sweden due to his work. And I said, I get so confused because it's like, it seems like everybody is involved. And he said, no, that's not true. People in these positions have no idea about the details, but they do know the power behind it. And no one gets to that level in the government without being corrupt. You won't get up there. So he says, yes, everyone up there are corrupt. They don't know the details, but they are very aware. And they're playing a game before us, right in front of our eyes. Most countries have like a two-party system, so that you get an illusion of democracy. It's the right or the left. It's the Republican or the Democrats. And then you have some small parties there for people that think differently. So that there's like a menu for all of us. But these are the thing. They set it up like that. So it's the two big giants, but it's two arms of the same body. And then you have the small parties that you can play around with that nobody really takes any notice to. But it's still the same body behind it. And it's just a theater play. That is why I am so not interested in politics at all. I never voted in my whole life. I don't follow it because it's just a charade, a theater being played out in front of you.
Well, I'd vote for that. If you said that on a stump speech, I'd vote for you right there.
No, don't. 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 But the thing is, to become a politician is the easiest job in the world.
Oh, yeah.
You say what people want to know, and then you do whatever you want to anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
The only guy that has it easier is the weatherman. I don't know about where you live, but this guy gets it wrong every time, and he's, I'm here again today. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Are you able to tell me quickly, just before you go, are there any particular sites and photographs and things regarding the Canadian terror operation? You mentioned a lot of detail about some of the goings on there and expressions on faces and whatnot.
I don't know any specific website except my own, which is lightonconspiracies.com.
Right, of course.
I haven't been able to put these things. Unfortunately, my backup where I had everything on when it came to Ottawa and other things were knocked out a few days ago. I mean, it has a there's so many technical problems for people who are involved with these things where things stops working. Yeah.
Ula is obviously a great guy if you've listened to this thing, but he's also going to be doing guided walks around the sites in Denmark and Sweden, the sites of these false flag attacks. And so how would somebody, and on February 28th, of course, is the anniversary of the murder of Olaf Palme. Where exactly did that take place? You're going to be there on that spot?
The exact spot, center of Stockholm. No, I'm going to take it. I take people on a five-hour walk around the site because it is an incredible conspiracy on a level that is absolutely mind-blowing. But the official story, it was a lone crazy guy who just went out and shot him. Boom, that's it.
Do you ever meet people on that? Have you ever been around there taking people on that tour from the Americans or maybe people that have gone through Dealey Plaza in Texas and said... you know, shared insights with you on that? Like people that also went to another false flag shot.
No, but Alan, without bragging, I'm looked upon by quite a few experts as one of the leading experts on the JFK assassination. So that one, if you want to do a show about that, I'll be happy to go into great detail.
Well, we'll have we will definitely go there a little closer to, unfortunately, the anniversary. How about that? But we'll have you back on talking about these other things. And hopefully there's not another false flag attack in the world somewhere. But when it happens, because it will, maybe I'll have to get hold of you a little sooner.
But Alan, can I say here, what I'm trying to do is let's turn this around. We're always one step behind. Just like with the Denmark attack, if we can see it coming and stop it by exposing it before it even takes place, that's the way to go. So what I would very much like to do is to inspire people to take action. And I believe that I've been a part of stopping two false flag operations so far. It is when you hear about a drill in your hometown, wherever it is, or you see that they're setting up something that looks like a film set, there will be strange vehicles, there will be people, you know, there will be a lot of activity around it. There will be closed off streets and so on. And you will see in the local news, today there's a mass shooting exercise here, there's a exercise here, or a drill here. When you hear about that, please take your friends, go there, bring cameras, bring video cameras, bring your mobile phones. Film them. Make it very, very obvious to them that they are being observed by us. Live stream it right up on the YouTube so that we can make them back off, you know, get cold feet. Because it's also every single time we manage to disrupt their timeline. I got this from Chip Tatum, the CIA guy. He says they've got a very strict timeline with these things. And every single false flag and so on has multiple things that is dependent on them. So every time we manage to knock the timeline out of order, it can take months for them to recuperate. So I say, let's just totally nonviolent, totally put the spotlight on them, and let's stop this madness. You know, let's stop it, because without the false flag, they have very little left. That is one of the main tools that they have used. They've started more or less all wars in modern time based on false flag operation. I tell you, that I can almost guarantee. And so it's a very powerful tool that they've used all the way back from the Romans and forward. So let's expose them and stop and create a beautiful future for all of us.
Well, it's a great idea, Ula. I wish I'd known that before, because I've known about Operation Determined. I didn't know about Operation Determined Dragon in Canada. When I looked around and I started to see it, it was announced in April and then re-announced in June. Mm. And then no further attention spent on it. And then, of course, these attacks take place in October. But that was the planning phase. It's set in there between October 20th and 29th. That's the execution phase. So, you know, I could have, if I'd known about this, I could have been in Ottawa for that week and filmed as much as possible. So I can see that could be helpful. So thanks for having a solution along with all this darkness.
Yeah, and I'm super positive. This is the year it's going down for them. I think we're looking at an extremely beautiful future. We just need to transcend this obstacle. And
well, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so if anybody wants to support me, please, the donation button's on my website, lightonconspiracies.com. Sign up for my newsletter and buy my books, whatever, because like now I'm going to Sweden and Denmark and I finance it more or less myself. You know, but it's important for all of us to expose these things, because otherwise it's screwed.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for doing your part. You've done more than anybody should, one person should have to do. Well, you've got a great body of work there. And of course, your website, lightonconspiracies.com, will be linked up through our show as well. And we will be having you back for bad reasons, unfortunately. But be well and have fun on those walkarounds.
I will do that. Thank you so much. You take care.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.